So what is James trying to teach us? You're not in control of everything. You have some control. And he wants you to have some control, some choice, but you're not in control of everything. What aren't you in control of?
How many days are you going to live on this earth?
The number of days you're here on the earth. Were you in control of the day you came onto this earth? You were not. And for most people, they won't be in control of the day they leave either. Some people are in control the day they leave. It's because they've lost hope. They don't know where to turn. So what else is James trying to teach us here?
God changes those plans.
You can make all the plans you want, but that doesn't mean it's God's plan, because his plan will prevail. Catherine?
Well, I think every single day, every minute of the day, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to get in a car accident or go up in a bank or something. So everything you do is not your plan.
Yeah, you don't know what the next moment is going to be. You don't know when you go home what will happen on that way. You assume that it will be just like last week. But that's just an assumption. You have no clue. Are you scared now? Some people get really scared because, oh, I have no control. Right, accept it. That's the problem. Is that we want to control something that's out of our control, and not trust the one who made it and controls it. Jeff?
James is saying your life isn't as important as you think it is. That you are just here for a little bit, and that it's about the decisions you make, either the good or the bad. Don't think of yourself so highly. It's not about you.
Right.
So what time you have now, make it focused on things that are ultimately important. But so often the things that we make ultimately important ultimately aren't important. Are you scared now? Always. But that can create a lot of frustration in people, because the thing that we're trying to do is prepare and manufacture the good life. But let me ask you a question. Do you like to be manipulated? No, no one likes to be manipulated. But what do you try to manipulate to create the good life? Do you try to manipulate God? And how could someone do that? How do we try to manipulate God so that we have the good life?
Cut a deal.
Cut a deal. Like what, Dan?
Get me through this and you know that I will be doing X marks the spot.
Yeah, so if you come through for me now, I'll come through for you later.
I think we sometimes approach it with the works mentality, that if we do certain things, God becomes almost indebted to us.
Indebting God to us rather than realizing we're indebted to him, and there's no way we can cancel the debt. He has to do it for us. Yeah, and it's a lack of understanding of how the world really works. We create in our minds the way it works, and then we work within that creation. And who becomes the God? We do. And God is saying, no, I'm the God of creation. You won't manipulate me. But remember that I am looking to you and for you to share something that I've created, to share it with you. So even though, in a sense, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought, because it's not about you, but in another sense, it is about you. It's about you having that right relationship with God that He desires for us, because He knows the way He has it planned out is going to be the best for us. The situation we get into that Jeff addresses, when we think more highly of ourselves, that it's about us, then we try to make everybody else conform to our will, as opposed to us conforming ourselves to God's will. Because then the gods shift. When we conform our desires to God's will, He is God, we are His children. When we try to conform God to our will, we try to usurp His authority and His power for our own good. And then we try to manipulate Him for that. So there becomes in the section of scripture we're looking at today in Judges 18, follows through Judges 17. We talked last week about Micah. And we see in this an intersection of God's blessing and human determination. And we see at the end of the book of Judges, there was no king in the land. There's no authority. Yes, there is. It's at the tabernacle of God. But in the minds of the people, there is no authority but me. In the world today, it's no different. There's no authority in the land other than my authority. I'll listen to the authorities of the land if they agree with me, but if they don't agree with me, I'm not going to listen to them. And to a point, that can be okay when they try to force you to do something that God says, do not do. But on the other hand, will we continue to be like what Romans 14 says, honoring those that God has put in authority? Oh, that's where the rub is. So the challenge is, we tend not to like an authority in our life because then we have to submit to it. We tend not to like that. And it goes back to the garden. Adam and Eve didn't want to submit to it. So it's a human issue. It's a dirt being issue. It's our human nature issue. It's not our godly nature issue. It's not the spirit that God is trying to form in us issue, because the spirit that God conforms in us and transforms in us is to be more like Christ. And though there are times He stood up against the authority, there are other times He submitted fully to it. And He maneuvered through that. So we have to look to Him to find out, how does He do that? But in Micah's case, we talked last week of how Micah, he was trying to set up things so it worked out for his best interest. He stole money from his mother. She curses. Anybody who stole this money, there's a curse on you. Oh, I better give the money back. Mom, here's your money. Oh, thank Yahweh. What? Okay, there's this sense that Yahweh, the God of Abraham, is in the mix somewhere. She's praising Yahweh for the money being returned to her. And then she says, go take $200 of what you stole from me and create an image that we can worship. Along with the other images that Micah has set up in his house to worship. He's playing the gamut of the gods. He's trying to figure out, which god do I need to placate so it gives me what I want? It's kind of a slot machine. And Micah thinks, now a young man comes along who happened to be a Levite, and he says, will you be my priest over my little shrine here? Oh, sure, I'll do that. I really have no place to stay. So he makes him an ephod, and he sets him up as priest, because his son was okay being priest, but man, I've got a Levite now. And he says at the end of 17, now God will bless me because I have these things. What's he thinking? Well, he's thinking religiously. He's got a sense of theology that there is a God, and it sounds like, well, this Yahweh that I know about, what he does is he has a place where you go to meet him. And there are priests, certain people, only certain people, special people who intercede for you, who have a special clothing that somehow works to manifest good for you. And he's thinking, I don't have to go where the big tabernacle is. I can set this thing up in my own home, and I don't even have to leave. What's better than that? Then I don't even have to listen to what God is telling the priests and the prophets, because I've got my own. But the question is your own really hearing God's voice? And if you read through Jeremiah and Ezekiel, there were a lot of people who were proclaiming things in the name of God that weren't speaking for God. So Micah thinks he's got it all figured out until some people from the tribe of Dan come along and they're looking for a land because they're thinking, well, we haven't gotten a land. Well, yeah, they did get a land. So why are they looking for a new land? Well, one of the things we see in Joshua is that they were provided by Lot a land that they were to take as their own. Because when they came into the land of promise, the people that were there were so sinful that God says, okay, they've run the limit. They don't deserve to be in my land anymore, and I'm going to purge them out, and I'm going to put you in there as my holy people to be a light to the world, to be a light to those people that I'm kicking out to say, this God that we follow is worth following. And it's by their attitude and actions that will convince the people that this God should be followed, because God will bless his people in this land if they follow him. And they've been given an allotment, but we read in Judges 19, they come and say, well, we haven't gotten a land. Yeah, they did. We even see in Judges why they didn't have the land that was allotted to them. And it talks in the first part of Judges why many of these tribes didn't fully inhabit the lands in which they were given. Because when they went to take the land, the people fought back, and the people didn't trust God to defeat these nations. They were trusting in themselves, so what they did is they stopped fighting. Or they just fought enough to control the people and just kind of coexisted with them in a way that was going to be ultimately detrimental, because in that coexistence is they took on their nature. And unfortunately, God is saying, don't go in there and take on their nature. Go into this land and proclaim my nature through your life so that it goes into their lives and they become people of my nature. But unfortunately, it's a whole lot easier pulling someone down than to lift them up. And when they allowed these things to coexist in their life, it drew them further away from God. So we have to ask ourselves the question, what in the world around me am I allowing to coexist in my life that is keeping me from a relationship with God that is going to be a blessing that he intended for me from the beginning? And we see what Micah did. He just tried to do it his way. He took a little bit of God. He took a little bit of his world. He tried to mash them together and then assumed that God was going to bless him. I've got a piece of you here, God. And the God of heaven and earth, he says, yeah, but what about the rest of the pie? Well, I've reserved that for these other gods because you might not bless me this way, so I'll go to them. He says, that's not the way it's supposed to work. And they send five guys past the house of Micah, and they hear the priest, and they recognize his voice, and they say, what are you doing here? Well, I was hired to be this priest. And they ask him a question. Well, could you go to God and ask whether us finding a land and being able to kick the people out is going to be successful or not? Yeah, go. It'll be successful. We hear the Levites speak, but one thing we don't hear is God speak. We could assume that God spoke to him and he's given this direction, but wait a minute. What we see happening later is, one, they weren't obedient to God before to take the land that they were given. They were living in the high country. And now that they were growing, the high country wasn't good enough anymore, so we needed more land. So instead of taking the land that they were given, they go, we just need to push out further. Well, of course God is going to bless you. You weren't faithful to begin with. But isn't it true that all good things come from God? But what if the thing that you assume is good is not really to your good in the long run? That's hard because we want the instant payoff. So then when they find this land, they come back to Micah's house and they have an army of 600 and they decide to take the gods. All the gods and the priest. And Micah says, wait a minute. I thought all this stuff was going to be good for me. Well, you thought wrong, Micah, because the good that you were trying to create is the good of your own doing, not of God's. And they take his priest and they tell the priest, come with us and be our priest. Why be a priest over one house? You could be the priest over all of us. Wow, that's pretty cool. So he says, sure, I'll go. And they take all of Micah's stuff and he's yelling after them, where are you going with my stuff? Your stuff? Since when is it your stuff? It's our stuff now. Is it because God was blessing them to take his stuff? It was good for them that they had all this stuff. So it's very hard for us oftentimes to think, well, this is good. It must be a blessing from God. But what were the means through which this goodness came? Was it from lying, cheating, stealing that you got this blessing? And that's what we see here at the times of Micah, is now he goes home and he has nothing of what he thought was a blessing from God. So is self-determination good? Well, it turned out not to be so good for Micah. It's not always God's view of what is good. It might not always be good for us. So what do we do to manipulate God? Lucky Charms. Now this Lucky Charms guy looks a little demonic, doesn't he? I mean, he's got that smile, but boy, the eyes just look different, don't they? And isn't that the kind of the attitude that we come to with God? Yeah, this will be good. Try. What's the charm you're going to use to charm God into blessing you? Jeff?
To me that we manipulate God indirectly by doing what Satan did in the garden. Is that really what he says? And is this really what he meant? What land are we really talking about? And so what we start to do is justify the end rather than absolutely be obedient and faithful to the call. So indirectly we manipulate God, but we do it through the world around us and the people around us.
Right.
Because we want success. So how do you find success or the good life? What is that? What is the good life?
It could be
different for each person. That which gets us to heaven or gets us to that relationship, ultimate eternal relationship with God, what goes back to the garden. What is the good life?
Three square meals.
And some people say, I can't live on the street. I'm going to do a crime because I know there's three hots in a cot. So to me, that's success because at least I know I've got a warm bed and three hot meals. Other people would say, yeah, but you've lost your freedom. And some people say, I'll exchange freedom to live in this crazy world to know where I'm going to sleep tonight, manage my environment? Because I can manage my environment. I know how it works now. Because everywhere you go, you're just trying to look for an advantage. You're trying to look for success. What's going to keep me safe or healthy or whatever it might be? What else? How else could we define the good life?
Material goods.
What's that, John?
And material things.
Material things. Could be power. And how do we get those things? Could it be through lying? Could it be through manipulating money? Could it be through charms or magic? Trying to get fate to bend to our will. How have you seen people who have claimed faith in God try to manipulate their situation without God? What do people tend to do? Because it's out there.
They rationalize what they want to be for the good, whether it is or not.
Micah answers your question in chapter 6, verse 8.
What's he say?
He has shown you, O mortal ones, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God.
Yeah, but what if by doing that I get taken advantage of? What if someone takes the good from me and takes it for themselves? That's just not fair. What's that?
Happened to Jesus.
Yep. Lori?
It requires getting to a point where what other people think doesn't matter and only looking to God.
Right.
Yes, looking to God, because there is so much uncertainty out there. The thing that you need to do is to remember you have to keep God first. Because in the end of all this material world that we understand right now, the only thing that's going to last is God. And whatever he does with this world and however our relationship's going to be with him beyond what we know now. But what kinds of things can we put in its place? What are those secondary things in life that are okay to pursue, but they can't become primary? What are those things?
Serving others.
Serving others is secondary?
After putting God first, you know, that can't be like, all you focus on is, what am I doing for other people?
Right, because that can usurp God's place, right? Because then we can feel good about ourselves and find worth in ourselves and value in ourselves by what we're doing rather than the God who created us. So what are some other secondary things that are fine to do, but we have to make sure that they're secondary?
Careers.
Pursuing our wants.
Our wants?
Yeah, just pursuing them. It could be good, but it could take you in a different direction than you should go.
Right, so Dan?
Our fears. Our fear stops us from doing a lot of things. Just this pandemic is a perfect example that we ourselves stop us from keeping God primary with our fear.
Yeah, fear that when he says, trust me and go do this and go be this, but people might not like me going here and doing that. So we think it could be occupation. It could be relationships that need to be secondary. Education might need to, not might, has to stay secondary. I know there are some here that are in school. School can't be your God because your school can't save you. Your occupation cannot save you. Your earthly relationships cannot save you. Your accomplishments cannot save you. They might make you feel good about you, and they might be the source of where you feel important. But what happens if those things disappear? Then what? These things are occupation, relationships, education, accomplishments, all these other things. These are means through which we serve the greater purpose. So in your relationships, you be a godly person. In your work, how you do things, these are the means through which people can see you as a God follower. And do you think God might bless your occupations, your relationships, your education, and your accomplishments if he stays primary within those things, and the things that you're doing are the means through which he is seen through you? I would imagine so. So these are the means through which God can be seen through you. Many are the plans in a person's heart, aren't they? You got a lot of plans. You got a lot of desires, a lot of things you want to accomplish in life. That's okay. God created us to dream. But those don't become primary. But it's the Lord's purpose that prevails. Because when all the things that we're pursuing now can no longer be pursued, because you don't have life within you to pursue them, how important are those things then? So don't switch priorities and run only after the things of the world that make you feel like you have worth. You have worth because you're in the world, not what you do with what was in the world. And when you do that, you have purpose. I've heard so many people at camp say, I just want to know what my purpose is. This is it. This is your purpose for having life within you. To love God and to love others. So when the certain end arrives, we will hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Come and share your master's happiness. Because that's all that will matter at that point. Remember that your life is a mist. You're here today and gone tomorrow. But with God in the midst of that life that's a mist, it doesn't just vaporize. It transforms into what God already intended for the life he gave you, to be a blessing to you and to share eternity with you. Do you need the prayers of the congregation? That's what we're here for. You need to understand your purpose and reprioritize your life. That's what Jesus died for. But whatever your need is in this place, in this body, where you try to help people, keep the priority and give the strength and endurance to be what God intends for you to be. Whatever your need is, you can come now as we stand and give God praise.